On Tuesday, May 3rd, the Tampa Bay Times purchased its rival across the bay, the Tampa Tribune, and promptly shut it down. What were the economics behind this, and how does this change the media landscape in the Bay Area? This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Kirsten Cooper. Let's say hello to our guest, Ken Kane, former managing editor of the Tampa Tribune, Wayne Garcia, a professor at USF Department of Mass Communications and formerly with both the Times and Tribune, and Alexis Milner, editor of the Tampa Bay Business Journal. Ken, first of all, I'm so sorry about the sudden layoffs at the Tribune. Tell us about May 3rd. How did that day start at the Tribune, and what happened?
Well, Carson, there was a lot of nervous anticipation that day. We knew there was going to be a major announcement. We also knew that we had to get out of the building pretty soon because they're going to start developing it, and we had to be out by May the 16th. Our owners, up until that time, hadn't signed a lease for us to move, so we knew that things were a little precarious, but we still held out some hope that some other media company like Gannett or Gatehouse or somebody like that was going to buy us and keep us operating.
Most employees came into the building that morning with the intention of putting out the following day's paper.
Oh, absolutely. I conducted a news meeting at 10:15 that morning, and one of the things we sketched out for the front page was news about the Tribune because we knew there was going to be an announcement. We just didn't know what it was.
And the announcement came when?
Well, at 2:45, there was a manager's meeting where all the department heads, myself included, were called into a small conference room, and in walked Paul Tash, the CEO of Times Publishing, and Neil Brown, the editor of the Times. So at that moment, most of us recognized them, so you could hear audible gasps in the room. The woman next to me started crying before anybody even said anything, I think, and Paul tried to small talk for a little bit, like, what's the news today? And we were like, come on, you know, let's get on with it. And he told us right off the bat, you published your last edition this morning and that we're going to close the Tribune and we'll be hiring some people, but for the most of you, we're going to pay you 2 months and that'll be it.
There was some discrepancy about that, about what the Times told the state. And what actually happened when those layoffs took place. The Times announced it expected to lay off around 100 workers, but in filing with the state, said 300 would be laid off. Now, the National Press Photographers Association has suggested the Times may have violated federal law, the WARN Act, which sets forth conditions of mass firings. Do you believe Tribune employees were unjustly fired?
That's a tough thing to say because I don't know the intricacies of the WARN Act. I can tell you that the numbers that were discussed early on in the Times, about 100, were incredibly low. It's at least 200. So out of, you know, 270 employees, I mean, it's not 100. Unjustly, I mean, nobody wants to see their paper closed, but I mean, I don't know what I would have done if the shoe were on the other foot, so I don't know if I can say that. They did abide by the law in terms of paying out the 2 months that they were required to pay, and they are doing that.
Wayne Garcia, you have worked for both papers and are still close to reporters on both sides of the Bay. There's always been healthy competition between Times and Trib reporters, but they also seem to have a lot of respect for each other.
There was a lot of familiarity. There were a lot of people that did have a great deal of respect and also knew that there was a difference between sort of corporate philosophies and the people who led us. And, you know, the reporters and editors who were, you know, really involved in being on the street.
Alexis Milner, the Tribune had been, you know, in a very rough way in recent years. But the Times has also been in dire financial straits for the better part of 10 years. It's gone from more than 400 employees back in 2006 to around half that now, probably fewer. Many of those who remain got pay cuts. Retiree health benefits went away. Times CEO Paul Tash in a 2004 memo told him, or was it 2014, told employees This is a good time to consider your options. He was announcing buyouts here. So the Times no longer has to worry about its competition across the bay, but how long does this keep the wolf from the door?
Well, newspaper revenue, by and large, around the country has been in a steady decline for years now. And so it's a discussion that's going on, you know, all over the place. And back in 2009, when we saw newspapers like the Seattle Post-Intelligencer and the Rocky Mountain News shut down, it made major news everywhere. And this event had less national attention. But the fact is, you know, you look at the challenge that daily newspapers are facing in terms of that revenue flow, it's mighty.
Do you think because the independent Tampa Bay Times does not answer to shareholders that it sort of lacks accountability when it comes to its finances? I mean, in most cases, if a company does not turn a profit, it's goodbye CEO.
Indeed. And, you know, again, being privately held means you don't have to say a whole lot. The fact that there's local ownership, I think, tends to be a good thing. Where we've seen this around the country, at least there is, you know, some sense of local equity.
Ken Kane, the private LA-based Revolution Capital Group, bought the Tribune in 2012 for $9.5 million. Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn back then said the paper just got a lifeline. Said based on what they told him, the group is in it for the long run. They're not inclined to just shed assets. So 4 years is the long run, evidently.
Yeah, and there was a lot of shedding of assets over that time as well. I mean, another thing they told us when they first met us, though, is we're not here to fund your losses. I mean, these are money guys. They're not necessarily altruistic in all their endeavors there. So when we had trouble making payroll or profit, you know, with Media General before, we went through several huge layoffs, but we went through a few tsunamis of small ones in the last 4 years, you know, furloughs, pay cuts, just to try to make the numbers work, you know. And the people who stayed were really in it because it was their passion, not because it was a stress-free existence.
That had to, back speaking of Media General, didn't Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway come in and buy or invest in all the newspapers in its portfolio except for the Tampa Tribune? That had to be a kick in the guts.
That was tough, and that was a sign that, you know, outside investors were going to be hard to come by because somebody like Warren Buffett wants a monopoly, you know. He thinks he could run a newspaper efficiently enough in a one-paper town, but when he saw the competition, the kind of money that we have to expend on circulation, it costs a fortune to deliver on both sides of Tampa Bay, you know, millions and millions of dollars a year to deliver the paper. The Times tried to buy it then, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. But J. Stuart Bryan, who was in charge of Media General, didn't want to sell to them because he knew what would happen.
Wayne Garcia, we have spoken about this brave new world of the newspaper industry before, mainly the impact on the internet or from the internet. The Tribune, like so many other papers, including the Times, I'll say, hadn't really figured out the best way to make this digital transition while keeping its editorial integrity and, of course, generating money.
It's very easy to sort of blame Revolution Group, and they certainly are a villain in the story if you're into traditional villainry. But, you know, for them to try to be the ones who figured out the answer to the digital transition it is a lot more money than obviously they were willing to put into it and that most newspaper companies are willing to put into it, because it's not just a platform problem. It's not just we need some cool apps. It's a larger problem of this fundamental shift that now everyone is a news producer and everyone is a news consumer, because we can, you know, be citizen journalists. We can take our phones out and video police officers doing things. And there's so much information out there that people can't separate the value of journalism, added value to information, versus just all the junk that's out on the internet right now. So it's hard to sell people that what we're doing and creating has a value that is worth you paying for.
Alexis Milner, according to eBiz MBA rank as of this month, as of May 2016, only four traditional U.S. newspapers rank among the top 15 most popular news websites. The Gray Lady, New York Times, is at number 5, Washington Post number 9, USA Today at 14, and LA Times last place there at number 15. What does this say about the newspaper's role?
Rapid transformation. Even the Gray Lady last week or in the last couple of weeks decided to put create a food distribution service with its recipes to augment print revenues. You know, Facebook for us is a huge referrer. I mean, you think about all the people that are getting their news from social media. It creates a lot of a completely different competitive environment that those of us who are, even at the Business Journal, we're a digital-first newsroom. We want to tell people what we know when we know it, and we have a relatively small staff considering. But there's even more responsibility on us to develop the kinds of relationships and sources to tell the kinds of stories in ways that others don't.
Ken Kane, we've talked about the internet here, but prior to this big crest of a wave of internet and websites competing with newspapers, there was a lot of buzz about convergence, and the Tampa Tribune got together with WFLA Television. There was TBO.com, and a lot of folks saw that as sort of the savior or the next incarnation of the newspaper industry.
Yeah, I look back on those times fondly now because I learned a lot from working with Channel 8. There's an immediacy to a TV station that a newspaper doesn't necessarily have because video is everything. So those guys run around like their hair's on fire. And, you know, newspapers, we kind of sit back and drink coffee and think deep thoughts. The convergence of those things helped both and made TBO a really strong brand. We even tried to converge the ad staffs at one point so they would sell not just a product but go out in the market and say, we can give you any one of these platforms. It never really worked. I mean, the people kind of went back to their comfort zone, and the TV people sold commercials
and didn't people some sold print reporters sort of resent TV in a way because they, you know, with the immediacy of television, they could scoop the newspaper reporters.
Yeah, there was a cultural schism there. I mean, newspaper people tend to think they're smarter than everybody else, and I think the TV people thought we just didn't understand their platform, which we didn't going in. We were constantly kind of fighting over, no, I need this, no, I need that. We worked it out over time, and everybody was happy after, you know, 6 months or so. But early on, that was a kind of a value struggle. We didn't value the same things necessarily in a newscast versus a newspaper.
Are there any healthy two newspaper markets left in the United States, Wayne Garcia?
The largest of cities are served by multiple newspapers. So, you know, New York Post, Newsday is still kicking around, and, of course, the New York Times. And the long-term health of those tabloids and you know, in those really specialty markets, you know, they may continue. But to go back to the Warren Buffett purchase of the Media General newspaper assets, that's what you see. Other than the strange case of Jeff Bezos buying the Washington Post, which is, you know, really more a statement than a business move.
Alexis Miller?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, as an observer and as a participant, you know, for us, you know, covering six counties and the wider region with a specific business-to-business focus, there is still a lot of room for really supremely local, authoritative content, in our case, business content. And we are small enough to be nimble and to try and react. To Wayne's point, I mean, I think there's a lot of questions about where this goes.
Mm-hmm. For decades, the Tampa Tribune has held a fairly consistent conservative editorial position. While the Times has a reputation for being the liberal voice of Tampa Bay, you can see this in its presidential endorsements. The Trib endorsed Romney in 2012, McCain in 2008, and the Times endorsed Obama both years. So, Ken Kane, has the Bay Area lost an important conservative voice?
You know, I think so. There's a huge audience for that. If you look at the presidential numbers, I believe, you know, it splits right down the middle. I mean, Democrats have been winning in the presidential numbers, but if you look at the legislature and Congress, the Republicans have dominated on the local level. You know, from a newsroom perspective, we didn't consider ourselves conservative or liberal, but I think you do need a variety of opinions out there in the marketplace, and there are going to be some people who won't warm up to the Times for that reason.
Wayne Garcia?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen even on my Facebook pages my conservative friends saying, well, unless they change their voice, I'm going to stop taking the newspaper. And, you know, we find in the past, certainly, those feelings have been there and people still needed that information. Now, they have some other ways to get that information, including not paying for it. I mean, you know, Facebook, our news feeds are edited and curated news for us. They're curated by our friends, and some of them may be crazy or, you know, my insane Uncle Louie or whatever, you know, who's posting all of this stuff that none of which is true. So, you know, we have access to this stuff, and we don't necessarily have to pay to have a print product in the house.
Alexis Milner, our good friend, USF historian Gary Mormino, said after the sale that the competition has been overall good for the community. And so are we, you know, that's got to be a big loss.
It's a huge loss. I mean, more voices in any kind of, in any community lend itself to broader thinking and really improve the democratic process, both in terms of information and the flow of information and leveling the playing field and transparency and providing watchdog. I mean, all the things that great journalism has done for America over the years. And on the sales side, you know, you got to think that there are less opportunities on the advertising and marketing side now because of this, and you wonder about more higher prices and some inability for folks to access, you know, a broader marketplace of this kinds of promotion.
And Ken Kane, the Times has promised it will keep its coverage of Hillsborough County, the other side of the bay, you know, local stories that the Tribune had been doing. But how can it possibly do that? Are we going to lose more local stories?
You know, you're going to lose some, no doubt. They did look at some key areas where the Tribune was excelling, or at least breaking news that the Times didn't have, which were on key communities that Cuban news, for example. Paul Guzzo was out front on a lot of stories about Cuba. Howard Altman on the military beat. They picked up some beat writers who were, you know, out front in terms of their topic material. But I think you're going to lose a little bit of everything. I mean, there's the Tribune has a legacy of, you know, keeping the heat up for transparency, public records. We've had great newsroom lawyers over the years, Greg Thomas and Carol Cicero. There's case law that was established by the Tribune, like Tribune versus Canelo, which says, you know, you can't just start an investigation and make everything private. If it was public before, it's public after you start the investigation. So, you know, we're part of that legacy of transparency and holding public officials accountable. And I think the Times does a great job of that as well, but you're going to miss something without that extra voice.
We are discussing the end sale and closing of the Tampa Tribune and the future of journalism in the Bay Area. Ken Kane, former managing editor of the Tampa Tribune, Wayne Garcia, professor of the USF Department of Mass Communications, and Alexis Milner, editor of the Tampa Bay Business Journal. Some remembrances from Trib employees, good memories and perhaps not so good, and we'll take a look at what's next for them and for Bay Area news consumers in just a moment. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters. The Tampa Tribune, which has been publishing a daily paper since 1895, shut down publication after being purchased by its cross-the-bay rival, the Tampa Bay Times. My guests are Ken Kane, former managing editor of the Tampa Tribune, Wayne Garcia, a professor at the USF Department of Mass Communications, and Alexis Milner, editor of the Tampa Bay Business Journal. Ken Kane, are Tribune employees staying in touch with each other?
Yes, they've created a jobs board on Facebook, and it's being updated like 30 times a day. They're all helping each other find jobs. There's an alumni page where they're just sharing memories and pictures. We had a great party the other day at Eulalie that Richard Gonsmart funded for us, and several hundred people came. It was huge. It was out on the lawn outside of Eulalie.
Wayne Garcia, you were at the Tribune for how many years?
I was there for 4 years, from 88 to 92.
What are some of your fondest memories being at the Tribune?
You know, I came here because of the newspaper war. I was working at the Gainesville Sun. I'd done my time there, and my wife was in college and graduated. I said, it's time to really look at what's a great newspaper market to be in. And it was year one of the newspaper war, because the year before that, the St. Pete Times had flooded a bunch of reporters into Hillsborough, and then the Tribune pushed back, and at one point had five bureaus, probably 30, 35 editorial employees alone in Pinellas County. And so I ended up working in the Clearwater Bureau. So it was just this really wonderful, you know, competition just spurred everyone to great things. And not only the people I got to work with at the Tribune, but the people that I got to work against at the then St. Pete Times, who have gone on to be amazing reporters and done amazing things all over the state and all over the country. There's been a lot said about the editors and managing editors of the Tribune back in that day, the Doyle Harvilles of the world. But I think the positive thing from Doyle was this sense of, you know, being scrappy and going out and finding out news every day and not being fancy about it, but just telling the public what was going on. And I love that part. You know, there were emotional times. We lost a good friend and a reporter, Todd Smith, at that time. And so, you know, my memories tend to be all mixed in with the horror of losing him in Peru to terrorists and drug folks. And so it's a mixed bag. But, you know, I left there having had an enormous amount of fun and learning a whole lot.
Ken Kane, the Tribune back in the early 90s had nearly 20 zoned papers covering Gainesville to Arcadia. And, you know, being in the news business, used to hear this all the time. I'm sure you heard it, too, that, you know, our colleagues in other parts of the country were just so, not envious, but they were just very impressed that we had a two-newspaper town. It was just incredible. And I think that's going to be a big loss.
By the end, you know, we only had 20-something writers at the whole paper, and I'm remembering Wayne saying we had 30 in Pinellas County. So it's been a different day in the last few years. But I can remember so many fond things. Our newsroom meetings, the ones I ran, were freewheeling. People who've been at the Times can tell you they're the opposite. Ours were not always PG-rated, but they were freewheeling, lots of pushback. We had a blast in them. So that was fun up until the end. I can remember spending the night in the newsroom on one of the big hurricanes that was supposed to hit us, but didn't, and we thought we weren't going to be able to get out, and so we spent the night in the newsroom, and half the newsroom snored, I found out later.
Patty Ryan with the Times was kind enough to share the thoughts of Tribune alumni several days after the closing. Martha A. Johnson says, I started working for Ma Tribune and the Polk Bureau for the Heartland Edition back in June 1983. Then we had 9-column advertisements, no computers, clip art, press type, and hand drawing. The old building was originally a gas station and a garage. So Ken Mobley, a summer job from 1977 to 1979, then a great ride for 20 years. In advertising from 1991 to 2011, grew up at Mother Trib, and it truly became part of who I am. Nice to hear from those folks. You know, Ryan also asked various employees what they would put into a Tampa Tribune time capsule. So, you know what? I'll pose that question to you guys. Ken?
You know, it would have to be something with Doyle Harvilles, even though I only overlapped with him for a couple of years. He was this former Marine, hard-charging, tough guy who had a million different sayings, none of which I can say on the air. But
give us one. We can bleep it.
You know, he would always say, the sun don't shine on the same dog's rear every day, except he didn't say rear, but but he had a lot of them. You know, he would lean over your shoulder when you're typing a lead. I covered the arena deal back when the Lightning first came to town, when they had Japanese owners and they were negotiating with the city and the county to get an arena, and he would literally come and lean over my shoulder, and he was the publisher, he wasn't even the editor, and you know, you could feel his breath right there and going, don't let the taxpayers get screwed this time, you know. And I was like, yes sir, because we were all kind of, I don't know, maybe Wayne wasn't, but I was scared of him.
Oh, we were terrified. Everyone was terrified of him.
He was terrifying, but at the same time inspiring, because you knew he was going to back you if somebody challenged your right to get records or information or whatever on behalf of the public. You know, you knew he had your back. So,
because one of the toughest things about journalism is you have to go out on a beat, see the same people every single day. you gain a familiarity because you want them to give you information and give you stuff. And at the same time, you have to turn around and whack them with a stick every once in a while. It's a hard thing to do. And you start to develop this difficulty with the stick whacking part of that. And Harville was very good at reinforcing that, you know, we're not there to be friends or anything else, even though we have to find a way to get this information. So, yeah, I would definitely think my time capsule would be Howard Troxler's bow tie.
Sure.
The Todd Smith Memorial. And then something nobody knows about, but it's just silly and sort of shows you the way that we started the day in a sort of both a profane and creative way. And that is Jeff Mohan and I and some others used to take the Family Circus cartoon and rewrite, you know, fairly politically incorrect and often scatological captions instead of the, you know, the very nice, neat, you know, cartoony captions in there just to sort of, you know, get our blood boiling in the morning and out into the streets we would go.
Alexis?
Well, I mean, again, having not spent time there, I don't have any perfect mementos, but to some extent, the last edition, because I think there was the community and the former Tribune alums, all of you, were shortchanged by not having some sort of formal final edition. And that is a little disappointing on behalf of the Times. I think that they could have used a bit more sensitivity on that front. And
yeah, Ken, I was wondering about that because, of course, the Times owns presses, so you couldn't publish that last paper if you wanted to. But I wonder, in this age, there had to be a digital version of what you're working on the next day. Had you gotten to that point? Is there some edition floating around in a computer somewhere?
Well, not a designed one. I mean, we had many stories in the works, and we had a template for what we were going to do the next day. But our designers don't come in till 3-4 o'clock. Because they work until midnight. So the paper hadn't actually been put together because after he met with the managers, like I told you earlier, he went directly into a meeting with the entire company and pretty much told us, you've already published your last edition. And that, it was tough as a journalist to be kind of muzzled on the way out. I understood it from a business standpoint because they were taking over our routes, our subscribers, and they didn't want, a bunch of Tribune people poking their fingers in their eye, I guess, when they're trying to sell papers.
Well, that is all the time we have for our program. Thanks to Ken Kane, former managing editor of the Tampa Tribune, Wayne Garcia, professor at the USF Department of Mass Communications, and Alexis Milner, editor of the Tampa Bay Business Journal. Very interesting conversation. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks, Carson.
Thank you.
Florida Matters was produced by Mary Shedden and Julio Ochoa, and engineered by Craig George, and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.